everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you along with Tom Fairbanks. Tom, I'm so glad that the easterly winds, which kick up so much dust and those of us that suffer from headaches, I'm glad that those winds are starting to die down, I'll tell you.
They had predicted earlier this morning that they were going to be gusting to around 30 miles an hour. Now we're just looking at light breezes in the forecast.
Good. Thank you very much. Today is the first day of November. It's Wednesday, November 1st, 2023. This is All Saints Day. Tomorrow will be All Souls Day as we remember the departed and especially the newly departed. And my beloved Ann Buckmaster is in that category. So we'll be remembering Ann and all of those that have departed on All Souls Day tomorrow. We're on 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice for news and talk. We have worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com and all of our podcasts over the past almost 13 years with the radio show. The Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the Live Line for our monthly conversation with Democrat Steve Kasachek, the representative of Ward 6 on the Tucson City Council. Councilman, how are you?
Pretty well, and I agree with you 100% about the dust and the wind and all of that. You know, I run every morning, and it's just, yeah, I mean, sneezing while you're running is not a good thing.
No. I was going to say publicly, thank you, Steve Kasachek, for joining over 400 people who came out on a lovely Saturday morning on October the 14th to pay tribute to a remarkable woman, my wife, Ann Buckmaster.
It was a really, really nice ceremony, and the speakers were spot on in talking about you and Ann and your courting one another. And all. It was just such a fun, if you can use that word, it was a fun remembrance of a wonderful person and an absolutely perfect relationship. And I was especially taken by the picture on the program.
Yes.
That of you and her. And Bill, you used to be young.
Yeah. Really young on that.
Me too.
Yeah. That was that 5-year anniversary trip that we started in Tahiti and then wound up in Fiji. And that's where that picture was taken. Wow.
How cool.
Wonderful memories. And Ann and I took those trips. We took 3 trips a year. They weren't all big ones, but at least one international trip. That's a lot of travel. Saw a lot of the world. Yeah. And I miss my traveling companion, but travel is in my DNA, and I'm not going to stop traveling. I'll tell you that, Steve.
Well, that's good. I would have to throw in the better you than me right now, because I've done a lot of international travel, too, and just getting on the plane is such a hassle now.
Oh, it is.
And it's so expensive.
Oh, it is.
So costly.
It is. Yep. So you had
got anything in your plans then?
Well, I'm kind of thinking of a trip to see Mont Blanc in France. I'd love to see that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So that's for maybe we always did our big trip around our anniversary in May. So kind of thinking about it. We'll see what happens. You had the op-ed piece in the Star. City of Tucson voters are deciding not only on a couple of ward seats and the mayor, but also whether or not to give you and your colleagues and the mayor a pay raise. This comes up, what, every couple of years, doesn't it?
Every 2 years by city charter. The city manager puts together a commission of citizens, and it's a 7-person commission. And the commission comes up they meet for 2 months, and they come up with a recommendation that the council puts on the ballot. Our role in the process is purely ministerial. We just put it on the ballot. We do not have the authority to change what their recommendation is. And so it's on the ballot. And while it's been on the ballot, people have had their ballots for, 3 weeks now or whatever it is. I would not have written that op-ed, to be quite honest with you, Bill, if I had felt as though the information people were getting in the mail was 100% accurate and truthful. And the problem is that in the, you know, I've gotten two mailers. Even the ballot language itself, if you read the ballot language, what it simply fails to tell you is how much the raise is for.
You know,
the mailers use all the, you know, kind of catchwords of, you know, 100, you know, full-time work for full-time pay or pay for work and, you know, that kind of thing, which is all fine. But none of it has said this is what we're supposed to be getting. It ties it to the Board of Supervisors salary. But again, nothing has come out and said what it is. And so the pay recommendation by the commission, this is what people are voting on, is to give, and this would be effective on December 4th of this year, the city council would go from $24,000 a year to $76,600, and the mayor would go from $42,000 to $94,750. That's a threefold increase in one lump sum. And my position has been and continues to be that I will not support that. It puts us above the area median income. It is, nobody's getting a 300% increase in their salary right now. And I will 100% concede right up front that I have voted in favor of every other proposed salary increase that's been on the ballot since I've been on the council. The last one was to take us to 36,000. The one before that, I think, was 42. But none of them have been to jump it from 24 to 76. The other part of this, though, is that, well, two other parts, is that it the proposal is to no longer have our salary adjustments handled by the commission and by city charter. It would automatically tie us to increases that are built into state statute. The Board of Supervisors are paid through a state statute, 11-419, and that statute governs salaries for all sorts of county officials, you know, county assessors, the sheriffs, the taxes, supervisors, and lots of different county level positions. The reason for that is counties are a function of the state. Counties are an arm of the state. Cities aren't, especially charter cities. And so what the vote is also doing is it's saying we will no longer bind the or have the voters approve our salary increases. It would all be tied to state statute. What also has been lacking in this conversation is the reality that there is already an increase built into state statute on January 1st of 2025. And so that $76,000 and $95,000 that will go into effect next month, if this is approved, both of those numbers automatically increase on January 1st of 25. The city council salary would then go from $76,000 to $96,000.
Wow.
And the mayor's salary would go from $95,000 to $120,000 by statute. So I wouldn't have written that op-ed if this information had been included in the ballot mailers or any of the things that you're getting in the mail. Well, you live in the county, so you wouldn't be getting it.
No.
But it's all been very mum's the word, and I think it's been intentional, and I think it's deceptive. And so that's the reason I wrote the op-ed, is just to kind of put it out there that if you vote yes, I appreciate the increase, but here's what you're given. I mean, here's what you're approving.
I like this line that you penned. Public service should not require people working in our positions to take an oath of poverty.
No, right. And $24,000 is too low.
Yeah,
and,
it is.
You know, we're doing full time work, and I am anyway. And the that's pauper's wages. You know, it's below minimum wage given the amount of time that we put in. So that's the reason I say I've voted in favor of every one of the other proposed salary increases. But the other line that I have somewhere in there, embedded in there, is that these are not intended to be career positions, and these are public service positions. And the back in the days of the foundation of this country, you know, people were recruited into these positions for a period of time. They would leave their oftentimes they would continue in, you know, their full-time work, but do these as public servants and then return to their full-time private sector work. And that's, you know, if our intention then is to pay council members almost $100,000 a year, then these are no longer going to be temporary jobs, public service jobs. They're career paths. And just, you know, one guy's opinion, that's not kind of what these are intended to be.
All right. After we talk about Mona's and take the break, Jesse Lugo, our friend, sent me an email yesterday about when can we talk about the reconstruction of the 22nd Street Bridge with the proposed center pedestrian path that Jesse says is dangerous and unhealthy to people. Well, when we'll talk about it with Councilman Kasacek after we take the break. Mona's Danish Bakery, they're now accepting, and I'll be putting in my order for sure, rolls and a pie once we decide. Steve Kasacek, what kind of pie this year are you thinking about? Are you going to go the traditional Thanksgiving pumpkin pie?
I like apple.
Oh, okay. I was up at Mona's on Saturday, and I saw a really nice-looking apple pie.
It's got my name on it.
Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Put in your order for Thanksgiving, which is 3 weeks from tomorrow. And Anna, in honor of Ann Buckmaster, we are going to do a Thanksgiving at the Buckmaster House. I will not be cooking. It will be more of along the lines of potluck Thanksgiving. I'll supply the wine and whatever, but I won't be doing the Thanksgiving turkey. Mona's, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. The website's monasdanishbakery.com. More with Steve Kasacek right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Buckmaster, back with you, midweek edition, first day of November in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Steve Kasachek, Democrat, Ward 6, Councilman on our live line right now. And Jesse Lugo, our friend, sent me an email saying, tell Tucson to redesign the 22nd Street bridge and bike and pedestrian path. In fact, there's even a petition drive. I think Jesse's, I don't know if he's the one responsible for it, but they're hoping to get 1,000 signatures. Your take on that, Steve Kasachek?
Well, yeah, I think Jesse is sort of the spearhead of the petition drive, but I've heard from multiple other people who live or use 22nd Street about the design. So there's a little background. This is a project that has both RTA funding. It's also got federal funding. The federal government paid $25 million towards the bridge. It needs to be redone. I mean, the bridge is older than dirt, and so there's no question that the bridge needs rehabilitation. The challenge that people are having, and Jesse is one of them, and he mentioned it, is that the design has a hawk light at both ends, which is fine. But the purpose of the hawk light is to divert pedestrians and bike riders into the middle of the bridge, crossing a couple of lanes of traffic to get there. And they would then go over the bridge, either on foot or on bike, and then hit a hawk light and then get out of traffic by finishing their cross if they have the other side of the bridge. I don't think I've ever seen a design quite like that. It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to Jesse. It doesn't make sense to lots of people. But to be honest, I do not know how much leeway the planners have at this point to rewind the tape and start the design process of that component all over again. One would hope that there is an opportunity for public input, and Jesse is to his credit, trying to generate that support. But I know our transportation people are fully aware of the angst that this design is presenting to people, and I don't blame them. You know, it's kind of weird. I mean, if you've got an opportunity to rebuild the bridge, that's great. But how about putting protected bike lanes and protected sidewalks in on the perimeter of the bridge instead of down the middle of it? So that conversation is happening with our transportation people. I honestly don't know how much leverage they have right now to make a change. I have asked the question, did those federal dollars come tied to this exact design, or did the federal dollars come allowing us to rebuild the bridge? And we do have the leeway to make changes. So, I'm familiar with the issue. Our transportation department's familiar with the issue. They are looking at it, and they are aware of the public concern.
And the time frame for the bridge redesign is what, Steve Kasachek?
Well, I don't know that it can be, and that's what I say. I mean, the conversation is happening right now, mm-hmm. and there's already a. There's already a construction schedule that's planned. And so I don't know how the funding sources are tied to this mm-hmm. exact design.
Okay.
But I do know transportation is reviewing it all. And I would hope that there is some flexibility, because it's a crazy looking design. And so, walk to the middle of the street before you cross the bridge. I don't kind of get it.
How about your update for us on the plastic program? For those that may not have been following this, could you give us a quick recap?
Yeah, a year ago August, I began what at the time was a pretty aggressive pilot project goal of gathering 20 tons of non-recyclable plastic by the end of the year. We gathered way over 35 tons. Now we're up to 200 tons.
And wow.
So people have completely bought into the notion of let's find a productive use for something that's otherwise going to simply wind up either in the landfill or the ocean or the side of the road. And so we are in contact. In fact, I was on a meeting immediately before your show started with the Bifusion people and the city project manager. The conversation is about building BioFusion, a production facility here in Tucson. We're in design right now. The city has signed a service agreement with BioFusion, so we're committed. They are committed. Both sides are committed. The city will build them the shell, and BioFusion is building the machine that fabricates the blocks. The blocks are construction grade. They are the same size as a cinder block, 8x8x16, and they are 22 pounds of non-recyclable plastic. That 22 pounds of plastic makes a 22-pound block. There's no waste. We finished construction of a 72-foot-long mural wall out of the Mission Garden. That's going to be used for painting murals of the history of the area. I was also in a call last week with the CEO of Trot, Therapeutic Riding of Tucson. It's out on the east side. They use horses for therapy for autistic kids and PTSD veterans and that kind of thing. And we're building them a tack room, an 800-square-foot tack room made out of the buy blocks. They just finished a 600-square-foot house up in Flagstaff out of the stuff. We're talking to several other local projects with the U of A and others about building perimeter walls and trash enclosures. And I'm working with a school here in Tucson. We're going to build them a couple of benches and a raised planter bed. This is a school for autistic kids as well. So lots of good going on right now. It's moving forward. All of these construction projects will be a whole lot easier to pull off once BioFusion is in Tucson. The time frame is sometime next year, which is kind of right around the corner, but there's a long lead time on some of the electrical components. And so we're working through that right now with BioFusion and TEP and the project manager. So it's all good. It's all moving forward. And I'm proud of the Tucsonans and county residents. I mean, we've got people driving in from up around where you live. They're driving down to the ward office and dropping stuff off. We've got businesses, we've got nonprofits, we've got everybody who hears about it wants to participate. In fact, I've got an auto repair shop. I mean, when you leave the studio, go out and tap the side of your car. The fender of your car is made out of plastic. That's no longer metal unless you drive in an old car. And this auto repair shop is bringing fenders and bumpers and things like that over every week and tossing them in to be a part of the project.
That is cool.
It is cool, and it's really gratifying that people want to be a part of a solution. You know, the old adage, think globally and act locally, and that's really what this is about. We will be the first city internationally, the first city to have stood up a process like this, that we're going to be able to generate these blocks locally, and general contractors are already using them, and getting them out the door locally is going to be really cool.
By ordinance, the city says these corridors like Campbell Avenue, that any new utility must be underground. Is TEP sticking with that when it comes to running new electric transmission lines down Campbell past the U of A?
So the ordinance specifies gateway corridors and scenic corridors, and there are several of them: Mission Road, Houghton Road, Campbell, Keno. There are several gateway and scenic corridors in the city. By ordinance, and this ordinance has been in place since before TEP's current franchise agreement was implemented, and so this predates their serving through this franchise agreement. The ordinance says that any new utilities have to be undergrounded, and so TEP has identified Campbell and Keno as one of their preferred routes for putting in new transmission lines. And these are 136-volt, 146-volt transmission lines that are about 115 feet tall. And they're the big wide metal ones that you can't get your arms around.
Oh, boy.
They originally felt that they could just get a pass and come up Campbell and pass the university and pass several historic neighborhoods and make a left turn and move and put these things, put a substation in next to Banner Hospital. We took a position that our ordinances mean something. And so we have continue to take the positions. If you are going down Campbell and Keno, you're going to put them underground. They recently, last week, went to the Board of Adjustments and asked for an exemption. The Board of Adjustments said no. The ordinances matter, and so TEP right now is in a 30-day window, deciding whether or not they want to appeal that decision to Superior Court. The other thing that they're doing, though, is that they are exploring other routes that do not involve a gateway corridor or a scenic corridor. And if they choose one of those other routes, then there is nothing by ordinance that requires them to go below ground.
Oh.
That's going to be a challenge for a lot of the residents who may be subject to these transmission lines coming through their neighborhoods. But eventually they're going to have to get to Banner UMC. And so somehow, some way, they're going to have to touch Campbell. And that's going to be a challenge for them. So it's a conversation that's happening. We have provided them, and excuse me, please, through a process called a special exception. And in a nutshell, what that does is that it allows TEP to identify portions of the scenic route that may be appropriate for going above ground, like, for instance, by the Union Pacific Railroad tracks. Why would we tell them they have to put those below the railroad tracks?
10 seconds.
So there are workarounds that we're working on with TEP, and I hope that we can come to a solution with them.
Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasacek, thank you very much. And if I don't talk to you or see you before Thanksgiving, hope you have a lovely gathering. Thank you.
You too, and I'm glad to hear your family is going to celebrate in Ann's honor.
We are. Thank you, Steve. We'll take a break right here. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio on the campus of Bustos Media. We have Green Things, and we love the work they do over there, 3384 East River Road, and this is a perfect time to replenish the garden. Maybe things did not look so good after the summer, and then that storm we had again in the foothills with hail that stayed on the ground for until sunset. I mean, come on. GreenThingsAZ.com and their sister business, ZocaloVillage.com. Is it too early to start talking about holiday poinsettias? I don't think so. They grow tens of thousands of these beautiful, colorful plants, so keep them in mind as you do your holiday decorating for Thanksgiving, which, again, is only 3 weeks from tomorrow. Our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, with us for his monthly visit, Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, superintendent at Tucson Unified School District. Dr. Trujillo, how are you?
I'm doing very, very well. Nervous for my D-backs, whose backs are against the wall tonight, but we shall see.
A lot of people, you know, I tuned in a little late to the series, and it was 11-1 when I tuned in, and I thought there would be just tons of empty seats. People stayed to the end.
People stayed till the end because for some reason, this year's Diamondbacks squad, they actually play their best ball when their backs are up against the wall.
Yeah.
And they kind of almost pulled it off last night. They manufactured like 6 runs in the final inning. And as it became 11-5, 11-6, 11-7, the fans started waking up. So there's a little bit of a bright spot heading into tonight's Game 5.
Yeah, I mean, based on that history, I would not count out the D-backs for tonight's game. And then that would send it back to Dallas. Anyway, we've got Proposition 496 on the November 7th ballot. It was the only item that I voted on because I live in the county, and that was the only item on my mail-in ballot. And I will be very open about this, voted yes. I believe that the district has earned my vote of confidence for issuing and selling $480 million in general obligation bonds for school improvements. And one of the reasons the district has earned that confidence is the letter grades, which we'll talk about in a moment. But first of all, do you have a good feeling about this, Superintendent Trujillo?
I feel confident heading into next week's election.
We'll
day.
Know a week from today.
We're going to know a week from today. I feel confident that we have made our case, an effective case, to the electorate. This is not about the quality of teaching and learning in a classroom. This is not about somebody's personal philosophy about the role of public schools in the life of a kid, or the role of public schools even in society. This is about whether or not a child deserves to be in a classroom with no air conditioning or not, whether or not a building that is entrusted with the safety and security of students and employees deserves a modernized fence or alarm to keep them safe. This is about whether or not a child deserves air conditioning on a bus. And that's a different conversation.
It is.
You know, we can have the conversation
it
about,
is
the district doing the best that it can teaching literacy and numeracy? I have those debates all the time. But what should be undebatable is that a child deserves to be in a classroom with adequate heating and cooling, and that kids are best and brightest, especially our future congressmen and congresswomen and civil servants and engineers at places like UHS, they deserve to be out of the basement. They deserve a standalone classroom building. And that's a different conversation, right? And I think that we've made that case to the electorate. And so I'm feeling pretty good about next week's chances.
The infrastructure is very dated at Tucson Unified.
The average age of a Tucson Unified School District school is 1955. So we're talking about a district charged with being innovative and creative, because that's what our parents and that's what this community demands. They want cutting-edge instruction that's going to prepare today's students to enter the workforce of tomorrow. They want cutting-edge science, technology, engineering, and math education. But we can't do that in facilities from 1955, where we don't even have adequate science labs with gas lines and water lines and state-of-the-art lab stations to be able to give our students a fighting chance. So it is very much an infrastructure conversation. And alongside of that, it's a conversation about school safety, hardening our schools so that they become more difficult targets for acts of violence. And these schools were created to be open spaces for the community way pre-Columbine.
Oh, yeah.
So we're having a very different conversation right now about school safety and what it means on the ground. And that's part of this package that'll touch every single school with regard to modernized gating and fencing and security measures.
And we're talking 88 schools with an average age of 55 years. Schools range from 12 years to over 100 years old. And I did not realize it, but TUSD, on your portfolio, you have more than 9 million square feet of buildings that must be maintained.
Absolutely. And I know the popular attacking points, the greatest hits, as you will, that the opposition always brings out. Well, you spend all this money on administration. You should use those dollars to fix your buildings. And the point I like to make.
Oh, getting back to attacking what goes on at 1010.
Yes. This district spends 8.6% on administration, the lowest in Pima County. So we spend around $12 million of our $560 million budget on administration, which is specifically principals, assistant principals, district office administrators, and actually a lot of the operational costs at schools are categorized as administrative. So even if you went principal-less and you went assistant principal-less and you had zero directors, no superintendent, zero administration, you're basically going to cut $12 million out of a $486 million operational need. Where are you going to get the other $386 million to fix the roofs and to fix the HVAC towers and to do all the flooring and replace your bus fleet? That's the point, is making these statements that you can just cut administrative spending. Okay, what are you going to do with the rest? So it's just that popular attacking point that take it out of the administration. Well, we've done that. We're the lowest administrative spending district now in Pima County. Who would have thought that back in 1617 when our administrative spending levels were at 46%? And so now we're healthy at around 55%. So it's always an interesting conversation.
Yeah, and the talking point for years has been the top heavy. The attack has been, it's a top-heavy district with administration. And you've just pointed out that is no longer the case.
It's no longer the case. And of course, the other tacking point is you got all these ESSER dollars through the American Rescue Plan. Use those dollars to fix all of your buildings and take care of your infrastructure. Well, you can't, because it's against the law. The parameters around the usage of those COVID-era dollars don't allow you to go fix the roof at Pueblo High School or renovate parking lots across the district or to bring our students out of the basement at University High and get them out of portables. So there's very, very stringent parameters around those COVID-era dollars that are limited to preventing the spread, mitigation, outdoor learning opportunities for kids, and retrofitting HVAC systems with safer air filters. That's basically all you can do.
Had a quick question before we take the break from Michael. He wondered about the underutilized schools like Santa Rita High School. Why are they getting any of the bond money?
Well, as long as you have kids in a building, you also have the responsibility to make sure that they're in an environment that is safe. They're in an environment that gives them an equal chance. And then I will say to Mike, not to say that I'm going to speak for any kind of a future board, or even this current board, any infrastructure upgrades that we make to any of our properties, okay, helps in the value of those properties if at some point in time a governing board wants to take action to rent, to lease portions of that property, or inevitably sell. And of course, that's a different conversation probably for a future board. So what I want Mike to know is, just because that may not be on the docket today, the upgrades that may happen at Santa Rita may help the value of that property years down the line if a future board wanted to take action.
All right, the letter grades are in for Pima County Schools. We'll have that as we continue with Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, superintendent at Tucson Unified. It's Buckmaster Midweek Edition on the first day of November.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I like that midday temperature, but I tend to run cooler. Well, that's why I'm living in Tucson, Arizona, right? Midday at 55 degrees in Silver City. So a great time of year to get away, take a road trip, only about a three-hour drive. Perfect time of year in New Mexico. Why drive all the way up to Santa Fe when you can spend 3 hours in the car and go over to Silver City? And I think have kind of a similar experience over there, a beautiful mile-high destination with the Gila National Wilderness, Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Just a great time. Check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org. Dr. Gabriel Trujillo is with us, and there is really some good news for Tucson Unified, and I think generally for all of the schools, the public schools in Pima County. A lot of A's. This was the annual grading of each school. A lot of A's, and luckily no F's.
Yeah. so Christmas came on Halloween for TUSD. That's when the letter grades were released. And I just cannot say enough about our employees, our teachers, our parents, and our community, because what we saw on October 31st was the complete transformation of the Tucson Unified School District from at one time a D, C-minus rated district into a B rated district. Consider that in 1617, when the administration came into office. 1617. My first challenge was being confronted with an instructional overhaul of a district where 30% of the schools, 30% of our 88 schools carried the letter grade of a D or an F.
Below average, 1 out of 3.
One out of three. And as we sit here today, we only have 12% of the entire district D rated, and we have zero F schools. And we have 56% of the district is A or B rated. And we have 90% of the district rated A through C.
Big morale booster.
So it's a huge morale booster. We now have at 14, okay, when people say Vail is the A-rated school district and Vail has the most A-rated schools in the district, numerically, we now match Vail.
Wow.
We have 14 A-rated schools here in TUSD. Now, we're a bigger district, but we match the amount of A-rated schools in the Vail Unified School.
When you have that 12% that are below average, now this really gives you an opportunity to give those schools what they really need.
It's time to dial in.
Really go in and say, what can we do? And I'm sure you're doing this. What can we do to bring it at least to a C?
And there are no excuses, Bill. This work continues. We give up on no school. We give up on no young person, no child, no teacher. But what we do know about the schools that remain with the D rating, these are schools that had the highest percentages of teacher vacancies at the tested grade levels. That hurts. These are schools that have the higher proportions of students with disabilities and special education services, which tend to struggle on the test for a variety of reasons. Not to say that that's an excuse. These are schools that have struggled with higher proportions of students that are not reading at grade level in the tested grade levels. So we can't let that stop us. So we have to go in there, dial in, and really be strategic and intentional with the resources that we're going to give these schools for improvement, because the job is zero D or F rated schools in TUSD.
And give the morale boost to them too. They you know, they work hard, the people over there, and they must not feel great about their rating, but you know, they're try to help them improve.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they're doing amazing work with, I think, a tougher set of circumstances that they see versus some of our other schools.
Sixth grade will be added to 10 TUSD elementary schools. I come from a district where sixth grade was part of my elementary school. Then I went on to junior high, which was seventh and eighth grade, and then on to a traditional four-year high school. I like the model. What do you think?
We're interested in looking at the model. We're responding to what our parents have been telling us with their feet. Parents have not been very confident in the TUSD middle school product, the big, giant, standalone TUSD middle school. So we've seen enrollment losses more pronounced with outgoing fifth grade families. So we thought, okay, what if we let families stay one more year at their elementary school and we revamped the sixth grade format and we focused more on preparing students for a transition to content subject-based instruction, to changing classes, to having multiple teachers, to the time management and the organizational skills that need to happen when kids exit the elementary setting and go into a secondary setting? And what if we tried to start creating smaller learning environments at these larger 6th, 7th, and 8th grade campuses? So it's a pilot, and every school opts in. No school is forced. And even if a school opts in, parental choice remains. If a parent wants to have their kid remain at their elementary school for the sixth grade, they're free to do so. Or if they want to go anyway into the sixth, seventh, or eighth grade standalone middle school. They're free to do that as well.
So there are, the option is there.
It's an expansion of parental choice. Mm-hmm. It is. We would rather a parent stay with us for sixth grade, okay, if they don't like their local sixth, seventh, or eighth grade giant middle school and they're considering another district, but they see that they can have their student remain at the elementary school that they love for another year, we'll take that.
Mm-hmm. Math remains a big problem. We saw on a front page article a week or so ago in the Star about it's not just the kids that are in middle school, high school. It's the university level too. It's a real problem with the math situation.
It's a huge issue with math. We call it numeracy. Just like literacy is the construction of skills needed to negotiate, process, and be fluent in a language. Obviously, in our case, English. Numeracy is the same. Math is a language, and there are two parts to math to being fluent in the language of math. You have what's called math facts, where you have to master the basic foundational facts of math, your times tables, memorizing units of measure, understanding equivalent fractions.
That is not a subjective area. That is you got to have it.
You got to have it.
It's concrete.
It's concrete. And then you need it to access what's called conceptual fluency, which is engaging in higher order thinking skills necessary to do more advanced math, like three-step equations, like solving geometric equations, like understanding perimeter and area and circumference. And what the number one challenge we have in our system, Bill, is the absence of math facts. And kids coming into us at all grade levels with the lack of math facts, not knowing their times tables, not knowing units of measures, not understanding the very basic, not understanding prime numbers, even numbers, odd numbers. And the state standards require at these grade levels conceptual fluency. And we're going in and asking these kids to drive when they cannot yet walk. And that's not just our challenge. That's Sunnyside. That's Flowing Wells. I speak regularly with superintendents around the math challenge. We are all seeing the same challenge.
All right. I've got about a minute left. Any final thoughts on your part? What have we not covered that you'd like to mention?
If you have a ballot sitting on your table for Proposition 496, the TUSD bond effort, a vote for Prop 496 is a vote for TUSD kids. Election day is November 7th.
When is your budget due for the next fiscal year?
The governing board takes action to adopt a budget. The final budget will be the July 15th governing board meeting, and they will adopt the proposed budget and do the budget hearing, which is going to end up being our June 28th governing board meeting.
And that budget will not have COVID funds?
This will be our first budget in 3 years with zero COVID/ESSER funds.
I bet you've already worked the numbers.
We have. Yes, we have.
All right. We'll see what happens with the bond. We'll know a week from today. Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, thank you very much. Congratulations on these school letter grades. That is really quite an accomplishment. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. That will do it for our midweek edition as we launch into the month of November on the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Dr. Gabriel Trujillo, who is the superintendent at Tucson Unified, and Tom Fairbanks, who does such a great job on the other side of the glass, hope everybody has a great afternoon.